Shoot the Defence, the best podcast in the world. We're out here.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you've played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, that's sending a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel, and my co-host, as ever, Mr. Rodri Giggs. Hello, Rod.
Yeah, you right, pal?
Yeah, mate. How's your golf lesson today?
It got rained off, you know. I didn't bother going.
Oh, okay.
And then I've just gone to the Trafford Centre to go in the driving range, and it was just a massive queue, so I just come back. Oh,
Jesus. So when you say rained off, do you just turn up and there's a sign outside like it's a Sunday league game, or does someone text you, or do you get like an email alert from your golfing?
Nah, I'll look out the window. If it's raining, I'm fucking off.
Oh, come on, here's me thinking you're paying top dollar to join a golf club and they don't even send you an email or a text, anything, just to say, don't bother turning up. Oh.
No, I've got an app on my phone that tells me what the weather's like and I can look out my window. Sometimes it's raining in Bolton, I get to Trafford Centre where I play golf and the flags are cracking, so you've got to be wary.
Oh, mate, you know what you just said about looking out the window to see the weather? It just reminds me of... that film, Good Morning Vietnam, you know, where Robin Williams is doing the whole radio thing and he goes, what's the window like today? He goes, you got a window? Open it.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Okay, well, look, let's introduce our guests because they're probably getting fed up here. First of all, returning guest, Steve Eyre. Steve, welcome to the show again, mate. How you doing?
Hi, Estelle. Thanks for having me. You okay?
Yeah, absolute pleasure, mate. Have you seen Good Morning Vietnam?
No.
You haven't?
I've got too much football, I've not got time for films.
Oh, mate, it's one of the best Robin Williams films ever.
Oh, go on, I'll watch it this week, but no, I've not seen that. Roger's your man, he spends a lot of time watching films.
Very, very, very good film, definitely worth a watch. Oh, it's a classic, what is it, 1980s?
Something
good
like that,
yeah. Vietnam.
Something
yeah,
like that,
good
yeah.
Up. Classic.
Yeah, but I thought Mrs. Doubtfire was your favourite, Rod. Anyway, well, I'm glad you're well, Steve. Glad you're very well, mate. Have you been coping anyway since the last time we spoke?
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of football. I've been doing a little bit of work for the media. I've been to a City game. I've been to Huddersfield last week against Wigan Athletic. I'm at Wigan Athletic on Tuesday against Stoke City, so I'm trying to stay connected, obviously speaking to lots of people within it, and there's lots of football to watch, that's for sure. I've watched as much as I can all over Europe that's on the telly. I've watched the German games and, of course, all the Premier League games, and probably never watched as much. So, I'm actually finding a way through, hopefully, the back end of this pandemic to quite enjoy myself.
And what do you think of the quality of the leagues that have continued since COVID? Because for me, it seems that a lot of the quality has dropped quite a bit, but that's to be expected given they've been off for practically 3 months and they're almost in pre-season mode.
Yeah, I'm happy to concede, Stel, that I've took my eye off, even though they're a world great. I didn't realise how good Bayern Munich were. I obviously knew that they were very good, excellent. I knew that, but I didn't know in the detail because I've now watched them 4 times over 90 minutes. They're ruthless. They score at will. They've got power. They've got pace. They've got talent, and they can beat teams at their level in their league different ways, and hardly even let the opposition get a shot at goal. So I've been so impressed with them. I've almost took them into my heart as a team that I will follow, not passionately, but with huge respect and admiration. And when you think that their nearest challenge is Dortmund, you go, oh, I wonder if Dortmund could run them close. They've been hammered today and things like that. And it just shows you how good they are. Keeping up to tabs with the Italian league a little bit, I expect Juventus to win the league, especially with Lazio losing at half time tonight. But of course, my main interest is the Premier League, and to be honest with you, I know City got beat the other night, it was a great result for Chelsea, but I think largely most of the teams have been sluggish.
Yeah, I agree, mate. It's been one of those seasons, really, hasn't it, where apart from Liverpool and maybe one or two others, everyone's kind of flat to deceive, haven't they?
Yes, they are. And Liverpool were outstanding, obviously, at Anfield the other night. Not so good at Goodison, but they don't have to be too good now to win the league. They've basically done all the hard work, and now they've won the league, and they'll get the Guard of Honour at the Etihad next Thursday. Well deserved, and it's a 2-year cycle. You can even stretch it to 3 when they got beat by Real Madrid in the Champions League before they went and won it the year after. World champions, European champions, English champions, they deserve it. It might stick in the throat to all of us who support other teams, but I think we have to concede.
Oh, absolutely, mate. And that's a fantastic segue onto our returning guest, a gentleman who was with Shoot Defence from day dot, practically. A Liverpool fan that was on the show when United were winning titles, when Chelsea were winning titles, even when Leicester won the Premier League. But now it's his turn to celebrate. Little Andy, welcome to the show, mate. And, I'm going to say it again, congratulations. I'm not going to ask how you're feeling, but you're buzzing still, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. That's sounded so nice there, what Steve said. Winning all of that this season has been brilliant. And over the last 18 months, I'm just so happy we got it done early still, to be honest, because I was a little bit worried after that Everton game that it was going to be crawl over the line, you know what I mean? But the way we performed the other night at Anfield, it actually made us forget that there was no fans in the stadium. The football was so good, and it just reminded all of us and everyone, you know, all the opposing fans, how good we have been this year. Well, so it's brilliant, mate.
Well, the thing is, Andy, I've known you for close to 10 years now, and you've been following Liverpool through thick and thin. And you know, I hear people on other podcasts saying, "Oh, I'm 23, I'm 22, and you know, this is so important to me." But I'm like, I know people that are in their 40s that the last time Liverpool won the league, they were teenagers. And you know, you went through puberty and you were seeing United winning the title, so it must have been difficult for you. But let's be 100% honest, as a father, seeing your kids wearing those Liverpool shirts celebrating their first title, this means more than just a football subject, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie about it. I mean, on Thursday, I don't know why, while I was watching the City Chelsea game, I started getting really nervous. You know, I don't know why, we're like 23 points clear, and I'm getting nervous. And my son's sitting there watching it with me, and I started welling up, man. And he's like, "What's wrong, Dad?" It's like hard to explain to a kid, obviously, why it was so emotional. But mate, the last time I celebrated a title, I think I had a glass of milk on a wagon wheel. You know, so, do you know what I mean? It was nice to be an adult and actually go out and, you know, we went met up with a few friends on a social distance one, I must add, and I had a few drinks until 2-3 in the morning, which was great. It's brilliant, and like you said, still, I've supported Liverpool all my life. I was a season ticket holder, as you know, for quite a while, and you know, part of the era was when we were really bad, mate. I mean, you said we've known each other since what, 2010, 2009?
Yeah, about that.
So you remember the Roy Hodgson era that I used to go home and away. I've had some bad experiences, man. So you know, it was and like you said, watching Man United, your rivals, just winning everything in sight for so many years. You know, it was a painful watch, you know. So it's nice to finally have a brilliant manager and a good board behind us, and hopefully this will be something that we can be in the mix for every year for the foreseeable future.
Well, the core group of players are there, the finances are there, the manager's there. I don't see why Liverpool can't go on and win another title, win it back to back. Possibly win it 3 in a row, but you know what? this is football and you just never know what's around the corner. So let's talk about Liverpool last, Andy. I hope you don't mind us doing that. Yeah,
of course not.
Let's get these other games out of the way, and we'll begin at Burnley, where they beat struggling Watford. Rod, we said during the week that Burnley perhaps train different. The bigger teams train with more intensity, but Watford, a side who are struggling, you know, they're a point away from the relegation zone. You'd expect them to go to Burnley and at least put up a fight. They did, but they came away with absolutely nothing, mate. Do you worry for Watford now?
It's always going to be difficult still going to Burnley. No, they've not played many games either to Watford. So, you know, they've not played for 3 months. It's going to be flat. They're not going to be firing on all cylinders. So we're going to see these games. We're going to see a lot more of them. Well, hopefully not. And hopefully some of them they've got into the strides and the game's a lot better. It shows you when most of the games, like 75% of them at half time, are still 0-0. So, like we talked about Wednesday, it's, you know, Norwich are gone. It's going to be between Bournemouth, Watford, Brighton, and West Ham, and Villa. Villa in there as well, aren't they? Yeah, it's going to be dogfight. Villa have got tough running now. They've got United. They've got Liverpool the next two games. So you don't see them picking up any points. If any of the other teams around them pick up points, then it's going to be very, very tough in Villa.
Mm. Steve, do you give Watford a chance of staying up? Do you look at the teams below them and think, well, West Ham are in free fall, Bournemouth can't seem to get a win, and Villa, as Rod said, they're in dire straits?
Yeah, I give Villa not much chance still, because their only hope, I think anybody believes when you watch them play, is Jack Grealish. They dropped McGinn today to the bench, so you're really looking at Grealish. He's pretty much man-marked by a holding midfield player or a tight fullback for the whole of the game, and he's the most fouled Premier League player in history, so he doesn't really get inches, yards, moments, minutes to actually show his talent. I don't believe you'll see the best of him until he moves to a bigger club. So I think Aston Villa are a bit flimsy. They struggle to keep a clean sheet. I know Nigel Pearson, I don't know really any of the players there other than Craig Dawson, but I do believe they've got a bit of strength. And Bournemouth under Eddie Howe, they seem a bit juvenile at the moment. They seem a bit wet behind the ears. They seem easy to beat. They seem a little bit flimsy and soft. Talented, but if Callum Wilson's not scoring like he was, he gets his goals in flurries, but if he's not scoring at all, I don't give Bournemouth any chance. I agree with Rodri, as I do largely with everything really in football when we chat, but I think Norwich are done, and I believe that Aston Villa and Bournemouth will go with them. You do believe the size of West Ham, even though they've gone down before, will have enough. Interesting, when David Moyes took the job, he was welcomed back by the media to the Premier League, and he said, well, I'm a winner. Well, he's proven to be not, because at West Ham he's not, twice. Real Sociedad he's not, Sunderland he's not, Man United he's not, and he played Jose Mourinho the other night, and he played against Jose Mourinho on the touchline 14 times and never beat him. So he's not a winner, but he said he was. So he'll have every belief he can keep West Ham up. It's just the size of that club that makes me think that they might, along with Watford. I just feel they've just possibly got some power in their team to get a result somewhere. I don't see Bournemouth, Aston Villa or Norwich, when I look at the DuPont, getting a result anywhere.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, with Watford, they've got Chelsea next, and then... Sorry, they've got Southampton next. My fault. They've got Southampton next, and they've got Chelsea. And then three games, which effectively... you can call each game six-pointers. They've got Norwich, Newcastle, and then West Ham. Their last two games are City and Arsenal. So they really need to secure safety in the next five games, because I can't see them getting anything against City or Arsenal.
No, absolutely. I mean, like you say, those head-to-heads will be crucial. You know, if they're counting it on, they've all got a bit of experience. I'm discounting the Norwich outfit, really, and their German manager, but... David Moyes, Nigel Pearson, Eddie Howe's got experience, Dean Smith less so. But obviously the size of Aston Villa. But just like I say, Stel, without knowing too much about Watford's personnel, I just think physically them and West Ham are physically equipped to get nick a draw, get a win, obviously then lose a few games. I just don't see any hope for the other three.
Yeah. Well, Andy, we've said in the past that without Troy Deeney's goals, Watford are in desperate trouble. Now, I don't think Andre Gray has kind of helped their cause by having a 20-person party. Who's using the toilet now? Is that Rod?
Yeah, that was me.
No, there you go. He's suggesting that Watford are busted flush, I guess. But Andy, you know, a lot seems to be going wrong for Watford at the time, and with, you know, with the greatest respect to the likes of Danny Welbeck and Ismail Assar, I can't see them pulling Watford out of the mire. As I said, other teams below them have got even worse luck. They've had got even worse fixtures. So do you think that given the circumstances, Watford are quite lucky to be in the position that they are now because the other teams are doing so badly and their fixtures are tougher?
Yeah, I agree, Stel. I don't know about you guys, but this is probably the worst six or seven clubs that I've seen in the Premier League for a while. You know, I don't know what your opinion is on that, Stel, but, you know, any one of them could really go down. And I think it's ultimately going to come down to whose strikers start getting bang on it. Now, Bournemouth have got some decent strikers in Callum Wilson and Josh King, but I think I was reading somewhere the other day, Josh King scored 4 goals this year.
Yeah.
You know, which is just not enough. Aston Villa just don't score enough goals. And I agree with Steve in terms of Jack Grealish. Grealish now is just a marked man. You know, he's their best player by a country mile. And to stop Villa, you just stop him, really, because there's no one else, you know, decent, you know, around him to cause any problems. McGuinn had a good start to the season. He's quite a good player, but his injuries obviously, you know, let him down. But, you know, in terms of Watford, if they are lucky that there are some poor sides around, you're right, Stel. And I think their strike force really do need to start firing if they're going to definitely survive, you know?
Yeah.
What you've got to remember is, Stel, as well, you know, these lower teams, they rely on the home crowd to get behind them, to win the home games. That's cancelled that now because they're playing in empty stadiums. Like the game today, Norwich, if the crowd was there, FA Cup semi-final, they get 1-1-1, they could have possibly gone on to get another one with the crowd behind them, but because it was just empty, they've got no momentum, United take over again, and then they'd get a man sent off in the end result. But, you know, these lower teams, they're going to suffer because usually they rely on to win the home games and they're not going to have that support, so it's going to be equally tough.
Yeah, that's right. Well, look, let's quickly talk about Aston Villa here, Steve, because there are rumours flying around that Dean Smith could be sacked tonight, which I'd be very surprised if they did that. They spent, over £100 million in the summer bringing in players, I think, correct me if I'm wrong. Fulham did the same thing last season and got relegated. So here's just proof that you don't have to spend money to stay up, because when you look at the likes of Sheffield United, who hardly spent a penny, they've worked their backsides off and they've reaped the rewards.
Yeah, I think Roddy made a great point there about the crowd. I think Sheffield United have had momentum, spirit and an unbelievable crowd at Bramall Lane that have got them through 2 promotion seasons and 7 months in the Premier League. They appear to have hit a little bit of a wall. Or when Ollie Norwood's goal with that ghost goal at Villa Park that went in, which was disallowed by a VAR, which should have been allowed, they've basically not been able to recover since. So it just shows you about crowd momentum and what can do for a player and a team. But as you started there about Aston Villa, I hadn't heard that Dean Smith had been under the pressure a little bit of possibly even going tonight. But equally, there's something suspicious about this Burnley situation with Sean Dyche openly challenging the club now to be more ambitious with their finances to progress. And when he was asked straight about his future, he said, "Is there a strain between you and the board?" He said, "No, there's nothing, not a strain. It's business, we're all professional, but I will say that it has become stretched."
Now, I know that Sean Dyche is very much admired at Aston Villa. I know that his family live in Northampton. So, you know, I'm just being a little bit suspicious here of thinking that two managers, one might lose his job, as you say, and one might leave his job in the North West and get closer to home. And, well, I don't know if it'll be about keeping him in the Premier League or bringing him back if they go down, but I wouldn't be surprised if he went, Dean Smith, tonight, as you said, that the number one target was Sean Dyche.
Well, do you know, in the past, I've been a little bit critical of Sean Dyche, but this isn't me being stuck up on anything. I understand the financial constraints, and when you look at the league table right now, Burnley sit 11th on 42 points. They're only 3 points behind Spurs in 7th. Now, if you can imagine Sean Dyche with a bit more money to spend,
yeah,
how well could he do with his team?
Well, still, let's not rule out, and let's not forget either, they were in Europe at the start of this year. They started earlier and will finish later. Well, as late as everybody else, but they started really early. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, 7.5 years he's been there. He's ahead of the curve in terms of what he's achieved at that club with bringing him out of the Championship. And, you know, I don't think he would argue with the fact, if we were to talk about them being above, you know, overachieving. So he's bound to go to bed at night thinking, just imagine what I could do with a bit more budget. And sadly, as much as I love these players, just imagine what I could do with a better budget to get better players. But what he does, he keeps evolving the team, but not his tactics. Still very much an advocate of 4-4-2, although it's a hard working one where the wide players invert and come into the middle of the pitch, and one of the strikers often drops back into midfield. So they do it great. Very, very much a British core.
Yeah.
That has to be said as well. British staff, British substitutes bench. And it's a nightmare if you're a substitute at Burnley because you don't actually get on the field too often. So he's got his set ways, he's got his approach, he's got his philosophy. I have to just repeat what I've said. He is overachieving, so I don't blame him for, while someone is overachieving, that he should be overambitious as well.
Oh, I agree. I agree, mate. And if you think about the signings that he's made, the signings that he made at the beginning of the season, he brought in Josh Brownhill from Bristol City, who I don't know how many games he's played this season. Jay Rodriguez came in at 5 million, which has turned out to be an absolute bargain given the way that he's performed. And that's pretty much it. He had to sell Tom Heaton to Aston Villa because they had enough goalkeepers anyway. And I think Naki Wells go to Bristol City? I think he went to Bristol City.
They lost a
whole heap of players. And don't forget, Peter Crouch was there. I know that he wasn't there for a long time, but when you've got that senior figure that can pass on knowledge to younger players, you know, he's done a remarkable job. And, you know, again, I've been a little bit critical of him in the past, but, you know, at the same time, you've got to look at what he's the cards that he's been dealt with, and he's done a fantastic job there. But, you know... What can we say about Sean Dyche that we haven't said about him, Andy?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. You know, he's definitely restricted there. You know, and he's, listen, whenever Liverpool play Burnley, you always know you're in for a tough game, and I'm sure, you know, every other Premier League team feels that. They've had a couple of, you know, drop-offs in form. They're not as, you know, as hard to beat as what they were when he was first there. But, you know, I can see him definitely moving on to maybe a, you know, a bigger job. And Villa is definitely a forward step, and no disrespect to Burnley. So if that link is there, I could definitely see that still.
Mm-hmm. You got to understand as well, still, he's done wonders there, but I'm pretty sure that he's changed the training ground. The training ground now, they've got a Premier League training ground, which he spent millions on. So Steve will tell you, once he got there, if you can't find anywhere to train, or the training's not up to standard, you can't prepare properly. And now they've got a Premier League training facility that it can base themselves at. And, you know, what he's done there with what he's got, he's worked wonders, like I said.
Mm, absolutely. All right, well, let's talk about Southampton against Arsenal here. A 2-0 victory for Arsenal in a game that is actually... more known for Lacazette sitting in the stands with an umbrella. That's the level in which we're talking about here. No one really remembers too much about the game. There was a the first goal scored by Eddie Nketiah thanks to a goalkeeping howler. And then Willock made it 2-0 with 4 minutes ago. Arteta reckons that his side can still qualify for Europe, which is interesting because I've seen some Arsenal fans on social media calling for his head already due to bad form, which is absolutely ridiculous. Steve, I'm sure you know about Mikel Arteta. We said it once he joined the club, even before he joined the club, that he needs to be given time. We spoke about it last week, didn't we, Rod, about Arteta requiring time and support from the powers that be at the club. I think this is actually a much more difficult job than when Solskjaer walked in at United. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I believe Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was wet behind the ears in terms of managing a big club, but had a core of players and had a budget to grab almost every window, to be licking his lips about, you know. And then he had, you know, he's grown in the job, and I have to say he's been excellent in the last 3 months because of what's happened to Manchester United, probably more obviously because of the COVID, but they've developed now into a really good football team, who are 14 unbeaten. Arsenal don't look like they could go on any run at the moment, lacking in everything in terms of spirit, organisation, obviously performances, although they'll be pleased with the one against Southampton, harmony. From the boardroom to the dressing room to the terraces, to the performances of big profile players like David Luiz, his last game for the club, and then gets offered a new contract. There just doesn't seem that there can be any agreement between the sets of people that are heavily involved in Arsenal, and Mikel Arteta has been, you know, tucked in nicely behind Pep Guardiola, winning football matches at Manchester City. A really graceful, nice man and footballer, but he's certainly got his hands full here, because whilst he's trying to get Arsenal better, Chelsea are getting better, City will get better, Liverpool continue to get better, and Manchester United are definitely getting better. So the gap for Arsenal, whilst they might think they can improve, the five or six in front of them are improving at knots, and you can throw Wolves and Leicester in that too. So it's making Arsenal stagnate for me, and the stagnation is making them not look like competitors, which is the worry for anybody connected with Arsenal, because instead of stagnating and fighting to go forward, they look like they're more likely to go backwards.
Mm. Well, see, this is it, Steve. I mean, you hear about managers needing time, but and they need a certain amount of transfer windows to get things right, but it doesn't help when you're seeing them giving the likes of David Luiz a contract extension, the likes of Cedric an extension, and a couple of other players that really shouldn't be at the club. So that tells me that the club isn't really intending on spending big in the summer. They just want to hold on to a few experienced heads and bring through the younger players. Don't get me wrong, I've got no problem with bringing in youth. I think we've seen the likes of, as I said, Nketiah and Willock come through, and Saka. They've done remarkably well since breaking in. But this is Arsenal Football Club here, a club that's known for winning titles, winning cups, being, you know, one of the best teams in the country. They have fallen from such a great height. And forgive me for this monologue, but I saw someone on Twitter the other day say, you know, as an Arsenal fan, we definitely need top 10. I'm sitting thinking, bloody hell, 15 years ago you're saying we need to challenge for the title. 5 years later, it's, oh, we need top 4. Now you're saying we need to stay in the top 10. I mean, this is just... Wow. Yeah.
Stel, just as you're talking there, I remember just watching them. It was against City, the team I support, and I know there was a plane journey on the same day. I know there was injuries, there was the David Luiz performance, but I said to my father, who was watching the game with, I said, Arsenal have lost their identity.
Mm.
You know, and for me, I'm probably biased, but they've also lost that English core. You know, Tottenham have got Harry Kane, Manchester United have got Marcus Rashford, you know, Manchester City, you could just possibly just say Phil Foden, just something that you cling on to, that you identify as English and almost like yourself, and has possibly watched them on the terraces. Certainly in Foden and Rashford's case, they have. At Arsenal, you just seem they're absolutely awash with probably dross would be unfair. but it's probably just only an upgrade on that. Mm. And they just don't have any type of identity at all, and nothing that you can cling on to that's endearing.
I think it's sad that when you have a player like Mesut Ozil, and look, he's got his critics, and rightly so, but he's a fantastic footballer. But when you have a lot of fans saying, oh, well, you know, he's got 300 odd days left of his contract, we can't wait for him to go, I'm thinking, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Is this the level that we're talking about here? And now some people are actually turning on Aubameyang as well. And I'm thinking, well, you lot are never happy. Never happy.
Yeah. Well, when you consider, again, as an outsider looking in, we follow our own team. Mine's Manchester City, but you don't know much about Wolves, really. You know a bit. And you don't know much about Leicester, but you know a bit. You know the manager, you know Vardy, you watch them play. But you think that the culture's right. You know that the culture's right. You can see growth. You fear them. You know they can get a result against your team. You watch them and you're impressed and you admire. And a lot of it's down to hard work and organisation. Arsenal are a mess. They're wide open. I watched them at Burnley last year, Stel, and I was shocked because they were in front, under my own eyes, and obviously I was looking forward to seeing Arsenal, and not one of the players, and I mean not one of them, sprinted, and Burnley were worthy winners. And I thought, you've got a big job to do for next season. But it's carried on to this. You've got to get your culture right. You've got to get people in your system that want to play for your club, want to play for the manager, and want to give 100% and sprint and overachieve. Leicester are overachieving, Wolves are overachieving, and Arsenal are underachieving.
I agree, mate. And I'm going to bring this one over to you, Andy, because you mentioned Roy Hodgson earlier, that Christian Perslow days, you know, which I'm sorry to bring up. But even then, as bad as Liverpool were, you still had two or three players that you could say, right, they'll take the game by the scruff of the neck, or they'll give their teammates a bollocking. Do you get what I'm saying? To get their asses in gear. Arsenal do not have that. And the scary thing about this, Andy, is that we had this conversation 6 months ago when you came on, if not less, and nothing has changed.
No, they're a circus, mate. I've said it for a long time. I'm not sorry to say it, but it's the truth. They're an absolute circus, and we've always said it on this show. When it's not right at the top, it's going to filter down onto the pitch. I think Arteta's only hope, and I say this because I've seen, obviously, you know me, I've been in the academy scene for a while. Hello, Stel?
Yeah.
Stel?
Yeah, I can hear you. Rod, are you there?
Stel? Yeah, call me. Yeah. Can you understand me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Andy? Oh, no. Technical difficulties for Andy.
You know what you're saying there as well, Stel, with comparing with Ollie and... Mikel said that Ollie went through a rocky patch, and the fans wouldn't turn on him as much because he's a legend. Is Arteta that much a legend at Arsenal? And you've got the clowns of the Arsenal fans, of the fan base.
Hello, Stel?
Of some of them.
Yes, Andy. Andy's going in and out at the moment.
It's not a good publicity for Dre, is it?
No, not at all. Not at all.
JB's the battery.
Hang on, yeah, but didn't he sell them to Apple? So isn't it Apple's responsibility?
Yeah, exactly.
He cast in. Yeah, that's right. Who used to own Apple? What was his name again? I forget his name. He's dead now, isn't he?
Steve Jobs,
yeah, he's gone, isn't he?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. It is what it is.
Yeah. So what I was saying there, Steve, he's not much. So the fans, you know, it doesn't take much these days. If they're turning him, everyone needs to be going in the right direction. You can't be fans saying, "Oh, he's not good enough." After like 6 months, everyone needs to be pulling in the right direction. It doesn't help when they're spending 70 odd million on a player that's not really performing at the rate he should be for that money.
No. So okay.
Hi, Steve.
Hello. There you are.
Sorry, I don't know what happened there. Just cut out.
Well, we were just talking about your Beats and how the battery probably ran out.
Oh,
Oh, that bloody Beats. You're absolutely correct. bloody hell. Really sorry about that, mate. Right. Yeah, I don't know where I cut off. I was telling you about a circus, I think.
Yes, let's go. So which one's Dumbo?
I was just saying, you know, we've been saying it for a long time about Arsenal still, and it just doesn't improve. The only thing I would say is, as you know, I've been involved a lot with my son in academy football and stuff like that, and I've seen firsthand the Arsenal academy, and I know it's not, you know, any consolation, you know, that the youth is not going to win them, you know, much, but Arteta's got some really, really good academy teams there at Arsenal, and I think their only hope really is youth, because this board is just, you know, it's not very good, mate. I mean, like you said, they offered David Luiz a new contract, especially after the mistakes he's been making this season. I mean, what is it? He's given away 4 penalties at the top six, being sent off twice, and yet they're still giving someone like this a contract. The club in itself is just a circus at the moment, mate. And I think Arteta bringing him in, I think he's had a look at the youth set up there, and I think Arsenal are going to need to take a hit and go and bring the youth through, mate. And you know, it's going to be a little bit difficult for them for the first 2 years, but they've got to stick with him and hopefully, you know, sprinkle the team with a little bit of experience, and then from there build a young thriving side that, you know, that's the only thing I can see forward for them still. I can't see anywhere else they can go with this ball, if I'm being honest, unless they leave and sell the club to someone else.
Well,
that's the only really realistic way they can go, because they haven't got millions and millions of pounds. So which other direction they go? What, they're going to be like Harry Redknapp in the transfer market, wheeling and dealing? Arteta's not known for that. So that's probably the way they're going to have to go.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And like I said, I mean, with Arsenal, you look at, you know, beyond the first team, they've got some exceptional talent coming through, Rod. Especially, you know, I know they've got one of the best under 15 and under 16 sides in the country. You know,
Andy, what I was saying when you was cut off to sell is, will the fans give Arteta that time to rebuild and have that transitional period? Because obviously it might get worse before it gets better. So will he get that time?
Absolutely not, Rod, will they? Because of Arsenal TV, mate. You know, I'm sorry to say it. You know, I know it's a platform for fans to express their opinions, but it's such a poisonous channel that is, you know. And, you know, they lose one game. And like Stel said earlier on, you know, I've actually seen it as well. There's people already on Arteta. You know, the guy's not even been there for, what is it now, Stel? 4 months? You know, if that. I mean, they're absolutely, you know, oh, he's too young or he's not good enough. But he can only do what he's got in front of him. He's got players like Mesut Ozil who are on 350 grand a week. You know, he's got players that have come from a club that had a transfer ban. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know, really. I mentioned it on the show before. You know, Chelsea sold a player during a transfer ban. I mean, how bad does that tell you that player was? And Arsenal went and signed him. You know, I'm sorry to say it, but Arsenal fans might get upset, but it is a circus at the moment. The club is a circus from top to bottom.
Steve, I don't know if you've ever had to deal with a director of football yourself, but Edu's come under quite a bit of criticism as well for his, how shall we say, relationship with Kier Jarabchin, the super agent. How much do you think he's got to blame for Arsenal's situation at the moment?
Quite a lot, because the role of the director of football, they come in all singing, all dancing to take all the pressure and hours away from the head coach or the manager, just to allow him to train the team and pick the team and get the team obviously on the touchline on a Saturday result. The rest of it, the old school, you know, Graham Taylor, Dave Bassett,
managers that, obviously I'm going back many years here, but they ran the club from top to bottom, you know, from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m, the youth, the reserves, the first team, there was less to do, but the pressure was still the same. So if a director of football wants the credit for the success of teams, then unfortunately they've got to take the hit and the criticism alongside the manager when it's not going to right. It's just that the manager's the one in the electric chair. I've been in that position myself. He's the one that stands in the stadium, in the theatre, and everybody can see him. You don't see the directors of football unless they're winning. So you can imagine they get away with quite a bit, but the shrewdies will know that the recruitment largely comes from directors of football these days. I don't believe that the managers sign all the players. I'm not even so sure they sign any of them. I think often a manager is placed with, we're signing this player, we're renewing this contract, we're releasing this player. I'm actually think there's a time now in our lives where the managers are doing less in choosing what goes on at the club, because clubs don't believe that the managers might be there for more than 18 months or 2 years, whereas a director of football will have the ear of the board, could be in position a lot longer, so they actually call the shots. So I'm all in favour that if a director of football has done well and gets a huge bonus, even gets his name sung and gets his name in the paper and gets a pat on the back. But yes, I definitely believe that they should take the strain off the managers when it goes wrong, but it appears you don't often see too much of these directors of football when it's going wrong still.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned Keir Jarabchian earlier because, as I said, he was he's Luis's agent, he's Cedric Suarez's agent. He's also Coutinho and Willian's agent, and both players have been linked with a move to Arsenal. There you go.
Has Willian not just signed a new deal at Chelsea now?
I don't know, has he? I'm not sure. Has he?
I think it's short term, till the end of the season.
I stand corrected. I thought Willian had signed a new deal just this week at Chelsea, but I don't know. The role of director of football still puzzles me a little bit and still leaves me feeling a little bit that I don't like it, and I much prefer it when a manager has got the full control of the club. And this is probably, I know we've discussed it already, what Sean Dyche is struggling with now. He probably is that type of manager that wants complete control of the club and has just lost a bit of it due to the swell of numbers getting involved.
Brilliant. Great stuff, Steve. Cheers. Rod, we haven't spoken about Wolves' victory over Aston Villa. Fantastic win for them. They're fifth in the table, 2 points behind Chelsea. It's their third win on the bounce since the restart. I know Chelsea got a game in hand, but boy, Nuno's team, they've got some momentum now, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. It doesn't seem like the brain's affected them. It's probably done them a world of good, because they started this season in July, so it's probably been a long season for them, so that brain's probably done them a world of good. And now they're fresh, and because he doesn't really change the side much, so that they know who's probably playing every week in, week out. He only probably changes one or two, so there's not a mass change. And they're just taking off from where they left off, and yeah, they look a real good team, and they're good to watch. I'd say one of the teams that I do enjoy watching.
Remind me which podcast said that in 2018, summer 2018, that what. Wolves one day will be challenging for a Champions League spot because of the facilities that they have and the resources. So remind me which podcast said that, because some others claim that they're going to be a mid-table side, but yeah. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, just being
you're patting yourself on the butt there.
Feeling a little bit braggadocious here, you know. It's Anyway. Right.
When you've got people behind the scenes, when you're talking about directors of football. When you've got someone who obviously works well with the manager and works well with the people upstairs, and you're reaping the rewards, it's when it doesn't go right and people are not on the same page and they're not speaking on a daily basis, then you see what happens. But it's obviously working for Wolves.
Well, yeah, I mean, it does help then, you know, when you've got a Chinese consortium that owns the club and you've got Jorge Mendes in the background, but... You know, again, as we said ages ago, they've got the right manager.
Arsenal got a billionaire people who own the club. I'm pretty sure they can find people like that.
Yeah, but the objectives are different, Rod. Their objectives are different. Their objectives are different. Wolves' lot, they probably want the club to succeed. They want to win. I don't think Kroenke gives two shits about Arsenal where they end up in the league.
No, they just want to fund, like I've told you before, they want to fund the LA Rams in the NFL.
There you go. This from an NFL fan, so I'm going to agree with you. Brilliant. Okay, well, let's step aside from the Premier League for just one moment and talk about United's victory today, because we're going to get onto the proper stuff with Liverpool winning the league in just a moment. But yeah, Rod, I don't really know what to say about this victory today. It was quite a frustrating performance, probably because of the fact that a lot of players look quite rusty. You were right in your tweet, not only just for the scoreline, but also the whole fatigue creeping in. Overall, obviously you're going to be happy with the victory, but the performance, what did you make of it?
Because it's a cup game, they don't really care about the performance. All you care about is getting to the next round. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's players that have not played have got 120 minutes under the belt. That's the only thing you can take from the game. It was slow, it was pedantic, it wasn't very good. It wasn't very good on the eye. But like I said, when the better players come on, they look a bit more sharper and work the ball a bit better. They got the result in the end, that's the main thing. They're in the act, that's all that counts. Mm,
true. Rashford came on, Steve. I know you and I had a brief conversation about him, I think yesterday or the day before. He did what he could, to be fair. He was up against a very pacey fullback. What are your thoughts on Marcus Rashford, mate?
So, for some time now, I've never... He's a conundrum for me now. I rate him. I rate his present. I rate his potential. He's obviously becoming this world leader. He's a little bit strong, but he's enhanced his reputation as a person by the media and his initiatives. But he's a conundrum for me, Stel, and I'll tell you why. The timeout for him... There's been so much change for everybody in the world, but for him, I can't think of a footballer more than there's change for with him. First of all, he's got back injury, and I think it was surgery in some form to repair his injury. So that was the first blow to his career. So you're always interested how they come back from that. The second one is the COVID pandemic, which obviously everybody is affected by. Thirdly, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in the time... whether it be time or, during this COVID or time just leading up to, but basically in the last 6 months has become a better technical coach. And what's happened now, they've signed players, most notably Bruno Fernandes, for Manchester United to become a better technical team again. Now that he's in the middle of the pitch, not only is he playing well every game, he's getting all his teammates to play better. And for a spell, and Rodri will tell you better, but for me, I was watching Manchester United for a year struggle, defending in their own half, sitting deep, on the edge of the box, hoping not to get beat. Talk about pedestrian and pedantic, like Rodri said as well. And the moment they had to break, they were trying to get Rashford away on the halfway line to race away into the half of the field, possibly 80, 90 yards, and use all his pace and his assets. Now Manchester United, the team have come up to the halfway line, they've become possession based, he's now at the top end of the pitch near the 18 yard box with nowhere to run, he's actually facing the wrong way quite a bit with his back to goal, and now he's got to become an up back and through player, and the lads are finding him with smart shorter passes, and I think Manchester United have improved, 14 games unbeaten prove this, but it's a real adjusting period now for Rashford. Because that counter-attacking threat that they were with him, Manchester United have changed their style through Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And I just think, at this moment in time, on the back of a serious injury, Marcus Rashford is just stuck between a rock and a hard place. What do you think, Rod?
No, yeah, I kind of agree. He's done well. The injury's put him back a bit. He was kind of on a roll. His injury's put him back a bit. But like you say, since Bruno Fernandes come back, especially now with Pogba, you can see where he's going. And you know, he's not He's not great on assists, but he's going to have to adapt his game somehow, or because he is a massive talent, but
I just think he's at the last moment, Rod, and he would either be doing it individual or someone would push him away and he would sprint away. But now United have just gone back to being possession-based, and they're more about build-up and they're intricate, and it all goes through Fernandez, and I think Rashford is looking at him thinking, I'm used to running off people's shoulders on the chase, mate. Why are you not playing me the ball? But United have become more patient and heavy in possession and actually a better football team.
Yeah, but Steve, can I just add, Steve, don't you think someone like Rashford would get into a Liverpool front three or a Man City front three? Because they're both possession-based as well.
No.
You don't think so, no?
I don't think Rashford's better than Mane, Firmino or Salah. And I don't think Rashford is better than Sterling, Aguero, Sane or Mahrez. So, no.
I'm talking about in general, like playing that role of a left-sided forward. You know, obviously, like you said, now he's got to adapt his game because they're not playing the counter-attacking football as they did, you know, last year. And he does have to adapt his game. But don't you think he has the ability to do that?
Oh, yeah, I said at the start. I mean, I definitely stressed at the start that I'm a fan of his. And I like him now, and I still believe in his potential. I just think he's in an evolving period where his own identity in Manchester United are changing. To be honest with you, Andy, I actually believe he'll change with it. I've not got a doubt. I just think at this moment in time, recovering from injury, the whole team taking time out from COVID, the manager has changed the style of the team, and I just think he's one that isn't benefiting from it. But I do believe he will in the end.
Yeah, probably a good shout there. You're right. It is going to be difficult for him, isn't it? Whilst the team is evolving into a different side now, you know, obviously he does have to adapt for sure.
We know, I think, with Marcus Rashford, that even on his quieter days, he's 100%. He appears to love the football club. I don't think that's cosmetic. His attitude and his temperament seem spot on. This would be a bigger problem for people with worser attitudes, and I believe he's a diamond of a lad.
Yeah, definitely, I agree too.
Yeah. And we'll find out the next few months when United obviously strengthen, and they'll bring in people either Sancho or Grealish. So you know he'll be under threat for his position. So he'll have to perform, and he'll have to perform better, or he won't be in the team.
Yeah, fair.
Joe, the goal that you scored against Liverpool this season at Old Trafford was the first time I've seen him make that darting run, across the 6-yard box, you know, getting on the end of it. In fact, that's the first time I've seen him do that since probably the Arsenal game on his home debut. You know, you always see him on the touchline, and the one thing that frustrates me about him, I think, I'm not saying that he's an unintelligent footballer. I just don't think he uses his initiative enough, which is what you need from a centre forward. You know.
Well, I watched him through the youth stealth through Manchester City against him, and he was always playing wide on the right.
Mm.
So I believe he's a wide forward. I know wide forwards and wingers are slightly different, but equally, obviously, you know, about 5 yards of difference. The wider forwards try to stay a bit closer to the goal than hug the touchline. So, and then what's changed very much in recent years is this 4-2-3-1 or this 4-3-3, which leaves your centre forwards on your own up front, with your back to goal, without a partner, no link play, against two fantastic quick centre-halves. You could be playing against Vincent Kompany and Rio Ferdinand in their day. Do you know what I mean? And it's hard enough for two of you having a go at it, but the game has changed that a lot of the players are in back play and your centre-forward's up there on his own. So that's why he drifts off mostly to the left to get his joy. Martial is the same, which probably cries out why Manchester United got Igalo, you know, as a quick fix, but we'll always probably need a centre forward, because Rashford, I think you'll be having this conversation on these podcasts forever and a day, so I really do. I think one Saturday you could be saying he looks a centre forward, I think another Saturday you could be saying he looks like a wide player, and sadly I think on other Saturdays you could be saying he looks like a sub.
Yeah, very true.
You've got to look. This is why Thierry Henry is such a good player, because he was the perfect player in that position. He could play on the shoulder and left, and he can play up front on his own.
Yeah,
absolutely wonderful. All right, last but not least, Well, Man City went to Stamford Bridge hoping that a win would keep the title race going by another few days, but Christian Pulisic gave Chelsea the lead thanks to some comical defending, and that's the nicest way I can put it. De Bruyne levelled out with an absolutely sublime free kick, but Fernandinho did his best impression of Edison, I guess, keeping out the ball with his hand, and the penalty led to his red card, and Willian gave Chelsea a 2-1 win, which meant that Liverpool have won the league for the first time in 30 years. Andy, we've asked how you're feeling. Summarise the season for you, because the reason why I'm asking you this question is I remember at the beginning of the season, a lot of Liverpool fans, I'm not saying you, but a lot of Liverpool fans were very critical of Klopp and FSG because of the lack of transfer activity. And here's me at the time sticking up for them, saying, well, you've just won the Champions League. You don't want to rock the boat and bring in players that might upset the mechanics of the club or, you know, Klopp's vision. You've got a winning squad here. The next stage is to win the Premier League. You only just about lost it on the final day of the season. So bringing in Adrian for, I don't know, was Karius the second choice goalkeeper, or Mignolet at the time, I don't know. He's an upgrade on them. So talk to me about the start of your season and how it panned out, because you guys effectively won it in October, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when you were saying it at the beginning of the season, still, when I think I was on your show when we were talking about transfers. And one thing with Klopp is he doesn't like to ruin the harmony within a squad. And I think I'll quickly go on to the Timo Werner signing for Chelsea. I think the fact that we moved away from that deal, because as you know, I told you from a long time ago, that was in the bag, that deal before the pandemic. But obviously that changed, and Klopp said it himself, he's not going to ask, you know, players to take a wage cut in this crisis and then go and sign a 50-60 million pound player. As one thing he's always had is he's kept the harmony within the squad. So yeah, there was a lot of disappointed fans that we never strengthened, but at the same time, like you said, we had a top class squad that pushed Man City all the way, a brilliant Man City team, you know, who got 98 points and we got 97, and you know, 22 out of 23 Premier League titles we win, you know. So the way it's gone, it's just been a carry on really still from the Real Madrid final. Really, it was like a blessing in disguise in some sort of way that we unluckily lost that final. We lost Salah to a bad injury, you know, and then obviously what happened with Karius, you know, it hurt the club a lot. And I think that hurt has driven the club in the last two seasons to push on and win these big titles, these big major titles that have been a long time coming. And it's just been a continuation. I think the team's evolved. I think they can play in different ways. I think Man City, I don't know if Steve might not agree with me, but I think Man City have got one real way of playing, which is just to murder teams' possession with their possession and, you know, their speed. But Liverpool can play that way. Liverpool can hold the lead if they're 1-0 up and just sit back. You know, and I think Klopp has just adapted the way we can play in so many ways now.
Yeah. And you know what I find funny about this whole situation is that I think up until November, a lot of people were saying Liverpool aren't even playing at their best.
Yeah, that's right. We were winning games, you know, by the odd goal. But we was always in control of the games still, I felt. Although we was only winning by one goal, or it was tight until the end, I always felt we were the better side. We was in control. And like I said to you, I think that's been the biggest change in the way Klopp set us out now. We're just such a much more calmer football team now. We just wait for our chances. Whereas if you remember at the start of his tenure at Liverpool, it was gung-ho, wasn't it? It was like, just get it forward as much as possible. Don't worry about the defending. We'll try and score. I think the Norwich-Liverpool game summed that up in his first season when we won 5-4. That was just a crazy game. And, you know, he's just evolved the way we've played now. We've become such a, you know, I'd like to say a real professional football team. You know, the way we see out performances when we're leading the game or if we're chasing, you know, we can change the way we play.
And Steve, I think Okay, we'll talk about FSG in just a moment because I think they deserve a lot of credit. But when you look at Jurgen Klopp and how he's evolved since he's joined the club, if you look at Liverpool, say, for example, the first year, 2 years of Jurgen Klopp's tenure, they'll gain a lot of muscular injuries around about November, December time, which could have been because of his training techniques, possibly because of the style of play, as Andy mentioned earlier, in terms of the whole, you know, what they call it, heavy metal football. It could have been that, because you're seeing players running 11, 12 kilometres a game, right? So I think you've got to credit him for the way that he's evolved and he's actually learned about the culture of the Premier League and how to look after his players, no?
Well, yes, and he took my close friend Lee Nobes, who was head physio at Manchester City, who was obviously just got a Premier League title as a physio. Obviously, he didn't get the points or the goals for the club, but he was instrumental in keeping the players fit for them to perform, so he poached him. So that was recruitment overload, if you like, still, that, you know, it goes beyond the playing field, that he was actually taking elite members of staff from other football clubs, which, you know, is a real shot in the arm for a football club when you can take, you know, best performers from other, you know, challengers. Manchester United did it for years. They used to take everybody's best player and strengthen their team and weaken everybody else's once a season. They did it for about 10 years. So Klopp's not only doing that with his players, he's doing that on the medical side. I hear what you're saying about the initial injuries, but yeah, he'll have evolved with the job. He'll have learned. There's no way he'll have not got him, but he won't have just handed the medical tasks over, very much hands on to find out the right methods, and they just appear to be absolutely just below the line or at the line at the moment of brilliance. You know, you look at City, who were at that stage with Kompany, with Silva in particular, and then they've just gone the other side of the line. I don't think there's anybody at Liverpool Football Club at this moment in time who are just past the line. City have only got Aguero left now in that category, and Liverpool's players and staff are either at the line or just underneath it with loads of potential to get to the line. Not one of them is past it, so they've got to be feared and revered at the same time still.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, mate. And Rod, where do you think the turning point was in Liverpool's fortunes? I personally think it was selling Coutinho for an extortionate price, which obviously enabled them to get Alisson and Van Dijk.
Oh, I think it was the Van Dijk signing. When you've seen him come, he's shown up the back four, and they just went from strength to strength. You know, they raised the bar last year, but City was just that little bit better. They just kept that level this year, and City have obviously faltered with injuries and loss of players and whatnot, and just Liverpool have maintained that level and kept it going, and it's just up to others now to regain that level, and it's going to be difficult. I think City will run them close next year again. I think United, I think, will be a bit too early. I think it's got another year to go. I think Tottenham are way off. I think Chelsea are not far, probably on the same pace as United, so they'll get stronger. So it'll be a lot stronger. It'll be a lot difficult next year for Liverpool, because they'll be champions and it'll be a big scalp for everyone.
No, absolutely, mate. And Steve, one more question for you, mate. When you look at the core group of British players that got there, as you mentioned, you know, all the other clubs, like you said, Spurs have got Harry Kane, City got Foden, Liverpool have got Trent Alexander-Arnold at right back, they've got Robertson at left back, blimey, Henderson's been outstanding for them this season, even James Milner, who just doesn't seem to get older, he's like what's that guy's name, it was Tom Hanks, sorry?
Peter Pan.
Good Peter Pan. I was thinking about that film with Tom Hanks in. What's it called now? Green Mile? Is that one?
Oh, Green Mile.
Green Mile, yeah? There you go.
Forrest Gump.
Run, James, run. Has James Milner got the personality of Forrest Gump? We trying to say this now, Rod?
He runs like him. He don't stop.
Fair enough. Well, Steve, you know, how important is it to have this core group of British players? Because let's be real, they've really invested in Melwood, and we're seeing a lot of players break through from their academy. So is it vitally important to have British players in there?
Yes, I believe so. The best teams over the years have had obviously they have. It used to be completely British, and we don't mind the foreign players coming in and taking the money, and if they contribute. And obviously that's become of a vast amount now these days. So many of them, and you don't mind it at all. But I think it has to have a core. I do believe James Milner. I've noticed in the last 6 months his body is failing him a little bit now. Two calf strains and a hamstring. He appears to be now at that inactivity of being in and out of the team, on and off the bench, out for three games, in for one. I think now you can do that in your early 30s, but it's creeping up on him now. But it appears to be such a good influence that he's around the dugout area. You know that he's going to be in first training and last away. He's got good standards and habits, so his cultural behaviours will be enough to add to Liverpool's strength. And then obviously Jordan Henderson has had his 2 years now of, is there a question mark about him? Is he any good? Well, he actually is, because all the good managers keep picking him. I don't know how long that'll last. I think if Liverpool get better, he might get replaced. But we can't be denied he's been fantastic for 2 or 3 years. Robertson has come from the lower leagues almost, and it's a fairy tale for him. And obviously Trent Alexander-Arnold's come through the academy. So what they've got, Liverpool, they've got a blend. They're not exactly stacked in experience in terms of age, but they've got youth athleticism, they've got pace, they've got either the first or second best goalie in the Premier League, and that front three, largely you just have to get the ball up to them and get up behind it and support them, and one of them is likely to win you the game. And they've not even really had to rely on a substitutes bench too much this year for impact, like a lot of clubs have done in title years, because the first 11 have been that good.
Yep, couldn't agree with you more, mate.
Stel, they've got three right backs that you get in any Premier League team. They've got Joe Gomez, they've got Trent Alexander, and they've got that Nico Williams that's coming through, who's really good as well.
Yeah, it's frightening, isn't it? It's absolutely frightening, because I rate Joe Gomez, and Andy will attest to that. You know, I think he's a fantastic central defender, and with Van Dijk there, and obviously Lovren and Matip, these are players that have got games, hundreds of games worth of experience.
With Lovren and Matic, with them two alone, you'd worry. With Van Dijk, he's just an absolute calming Rolls Royce next year.
Oh, I agree.
So they've just got it's totally different.
I agree, but I mean, the experience that they've got though.
Sorry, Stel.
Go on.
I was just going to say, I was actually gutted because I was speaking to an Arsenal fan the other day about David Luiz. And he's saying, "Oh, we only signed David Luiz for a stopgap." But I was thinking, why couldn't you get Lovren then for a stopgap? You know, honestly, I think Lovren's, he's going to be on his way out. I think there'll be maybe one of the youth players coming through into the first team. I think he's probably our weakest player still. If you remember the Everton game last week, he was actually in full control of that match, and the minute Lovren come on, Everton were like, right, here we go, pump it up top, get on top of Lovren. And you saw what he did in the 5 minutes he was on the pitch. It was just complete carnage, mate.
Yeah
he's a nervous wreck, but you got Gomez, you got Matip, you could probably, Fabinho can play there as well.
Yeah absolutely. I mean, you guys are talking about English players. I don't know if you agree with me, guys, obviously because of Harry Maguire. I think Joe Gomez is England's best centre back.
Well,
he's up there.
Well, let's be honest. Maguire hasn't had an outstanding season, but I think that price tag is killing him. To be fair,
yeah,
I think the price tag.
No, 100%.
So I think the price.
Well, what's killing him is being square on in the middle of the park and getting roasted and conceding a goal. That's stuff like that's killing him.
Because that
doesn't happen to Van Dijk.
Yeah, and I just think you guys obviously witnessed Rio Ferdinand at your club, and he was an outstanding defender, one of the best the Premier League's ever seen, and one of the best in an England shirt. And I just look at Joe Gomez, and I see a bit of Rio in him. Mm-hmm. In fact, I see a lot of Rio in him, because I think technically the way he could bring the ball forward, the way he controls the football, his composure on the ball, I just think he's an outstanding centre-back.
Oh, agreed. Well, look, I know that there's a few players that might be leaving this summer. Shaqiri, possibly. Lallana, I think he's on his way out. Lovren, as you've mentioned. There's four players, possibly four players. I think that's pretty much a good number of players to get rid of. Maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain. I can't see him really kicking on at Liverpool, to be honest. That's just my opinion. But how many?
I think he's done well this year when he's played.
Yeah, he's done well. Yes, definitely.
Okay, fair enough.
He's one of them people. Can you keep fit all season?
Yeah, you know what it is, Stel? I think the player there that is fighting for his future is Naby Keita. I think with the pandemic, I think Naby Keita's lucky in terms of him not being sold this summer. I think Naby Keita's got a chance now in the coming season to prove himself, because he's a talented player, Naby Keita, but he's been so injury prone. I think the power of the Premier League has affected him, and it happens to some players, you know. Still, you've seen over the years players coming from abroad, they're brilliant in their, you know, when they've played, and come over to the Premier League and just failed. And we've seen glimpses of Naby Keita, of what a good player he could be, but I think he's the player this year, I think mostly, that will be fighting for his future at Liverpool.
No, it's a fair point, mate. Fair point. Okay.
You know, when you look at Liverpool's midfield, it's nothing really special, is it? Like Jordan Henderson. No. Yeah, they're good players, but they're nothing really special. But, you know, the manager's got them all working together. It's just like a nice type of glue, and they've all got them going in the right direction. And enough Wijnaldum, Fabinho, they're not world-class midfielders, but, you know, they're Premier League winners.
Mm. Andy, how many more players do you think you need to bring in to cement yourselves as these long-term title winners? Because we've seen United from, say, 99 to 2003, 2004, winning titles, winning European trophies, cups, etc., etc. Obviously, you guys want to get back to doing that. So,
yeah.
How many players do you think you are away from reaching that level?
You know what, Stel? It's really hard now because, you know, like I said to you, the Timo Werner deal was in the bag, mate, before the pandemic. You know, it's been made public by some journalists that Klopp and Werner had spoken way before the pandemic, and you heard Werner say it a few times, didn't he, on the TV about how much he provided Liverpool and stuff like that. But the pandemic has changed a lot of our plans now, mate. I really do believe that. And that's one thing I remember what Manchester United used to do was at the top, they used to bring in one or two players. And I think that would be the case with us. I would go for, you know, a creative midfielder, because I think next year a lot of teams will play the low block against us, and, you know, we're going to need that little David Silva type footballer to, you know, to find the gaps for the front three. Because I think teams will defend so much more, you know, as a low block against us. So, and like you said, we're going to lose about three or four players. I think a lot of the youth guys will come through still. Nico Williams, Harvey Elliott and Curtis Jones will definitely be moving into the first team squad permanently. So I think the pandemic's sort of changed a lot of our plans.
Understandable. Well, one more thing, Steve, before we wrap things up, mate. Let's talk about City, because it hasn't been a great season, but hey, they're still in the Champions League. They're still in line, in chance of winning the FA Cup. They won the League Cup. So it hasn't been like a disastrous season. Okay, granted, the points gap is huge between, you know, them and Liverpool. They've lost 8 games this season, conceded 33 goals. Guardiola won't be happy, obviously. But when you take into consideration the amount of injuries that City have had, the loss of Vincent Kompany, ageing players.
Yes.
How much work needs to be done, do you think? Are people overreacting to say that a complete overhaul needs to be done?
No, there's plenty needs to be done, and what we have to do now, when you're striving to be the best, Liverpool have been the best, so you look at what they've got, and their defence, the front three of City and the front three of Liverpool is mouth-watering, breathtaking, a fantastic array of talent.
But the back lads of Liverpool are set. They are absolutely set. They're nowhere near their peak. They're actually at their powers at the moment. Are pretty much heading towards maximum. I think Manchester City, I know you can't play them all still. They need five defenders for a start. Five.
Wow.
Not one. They need five.
Wow.
So 50% of the back four the other night aren't good enough for City to progress. Kyle Walker, yes. Fernandinho, no. Not as a centre-half, because we love him in centre midfield. Laporte, yes. Benjamin Mendy, no. Zinchenko, substitute. John Stones, no. Nicolas Otamendi, no. So there is room for five defenders to come into that football club if they can choose the right ones for the club to progress. If they do it right, they can easily get five better defenders than what's already in place. Everybody talks about Vincent Kompany being as the biggest miss, but nobody mentioned Yaya Toure. Nobody drives from midfield like he did. The bigger the game, the better the occasion, the better he was. Nobody surges into the box like he did. And what we've got now, Gundogan I love, and we've got Rodri who I like, and obviously I think we've got Kevin De Bruyne, who's the best midfielder in the world, but a lot of his work is obviously last pass. But nobody surges into the box. David Silva's going to drift into another challenge, slowly into retirement. And Sane is likely to go to Bayern Munich, who's our quickest forward at getting the job done. So we've got loads of wriggle room to get right. And as you know yourself, as football supporters, getting the right players is one thing, and you think City will have the budget to do it. But getting them to gel straight away, to challenge and to be title winners again, won't be easy. Replacing, I'll say it again, Sane going, Silva going, still not replaced Toure, still not replaced Kompany, and for me, they've got vacancies in four defending slots. They've got loads to do.
Well, you signed Cancelo in the summer from Juventus, didn't you? And even he hasn't kicked the ball much, to be fair. But what about the academy then? Because we know how much money has been pumped into that side of things. Are there any players that we could say that they'll come in? No, nothing.
No, not for me. Wow. There was three young lads on the other night. Tommy Doyle, with dead pleas for him because his grandfather's Mike Doyle, ex-City legend captain, who passed away many years ago. But Glyn Pardo, who's a friend of us all, his other grandfather only died 2 weeks ago, so for him to, Tommy to be sub, and for Glyn not to see it was very, very cruel and heartbreaking for everybody concerned. Howard Bellis at centre-half, fine. Cole Palmer midfield. But I'm saying this with a passion as a supporter. I'm worried now that the holding house of Manchester City appears to be a money-making scheme and business, and they do it fantastically well. A lot of foreign players come in the building, don't make an appearance, and they go possibly for a loan or two and they get sold for millions of pounds more.
Yeah.
But we are sadly lacking a centre forward to come through the system. United have got Rashford, Tottenham have got Kane, United have got Mason Greenwood, City haven't got anybody. And to think the other night that Sergio Aguero is going to be out for 7 weeks, and if you're ever going to play Jesus, that would be a game, but he's obviously saving him for tomorrow. We played without a centre-forward, or we just played Bernardo Silva as best as he could, yet all this money we've got into this academy, and we haven't developed a centre-forward, when really, the one we have got is Phil Foden, who was always going to be good when he was 9 years of age, signed by Jim Cassell, and the rest of the ones seem to come in and get sold and don't make an appearance. So, to answer your question, Stel, I don't believe the academy, whilst it's not winning youth cups and getting players through, it is making money, but nobody is actually threatening the shirt.
Yeah, that's a very fair point, and I don't think it helps matters when you hear the likes of Guardiola saying, well, you know, when we found out it was David Silva's last year, I told the board that we've got Phil Foden, so we don't have to invest. Now, for me, that smacks of something very similar to what Fergie did, saying, you know, no value in the market to protect the Glazers, or what Arsene Wenger has did over many years, saying, I'm not going to bankrupt the club by spending X amount of money on certain players. You think that's what he's doing, protecting the business model?
Well, I don't know. I've just thought of another one. I don't think I mentioned as well. Tammy Abraham.
Chelsea. Yeah.
He would be on City's bench. Chelsea have developed a centre forward. United have developed two. I don't know about. Liverpool have got anybody threatening that position either. But they've got, you know, cup teams this year that they've had 11 lad get match experience. Guardiola, I don't believe he's going to plan for too many teenagers to be in around the City first team in 2 or 3 years' time in case he's not here himself. I think he's very much for the moment. I think, obviously, like I say, he loves Phil Foden, but like we all do. Like I say, he was there when he was 9 years of age. He was there when I was there. He was signed by a previous academy manager, and he was literally always going to make... The lad made it himself. He only just had a little bit of nurturing from the coaches, but the lad made it himself. So in terms of, like, where do we go next, I think it has to be in the transfer market again, because I really don't think we've got, you know, enough that's going to, you know, push and threaten Pep Guardiola's team. And I'm only guessing this because, obviously, I don't know the manager. I'm not sure he's too bothered. I think he just wants... I think he just lives very much for the right here, right now.
Yeah. The thing is, to be fair, mate, when you look at the list of players that have left City over the past few seasons, I don't think they'd even touch the first team squad. Angus Gunn being one of them. I think Douglas Luiz was... he went to Aston Villa, didn't he?
Yeah.
Pablo Mari, that obviously went to Flamengo, but he's going to Arsenal now. I think he signed a long-term contract with Arsenal. Then he had, like, I think Jason Denea. He's at Lyon. Who else was Iheanacho? Is it Leicester? None of these players would touch Man City, would they? They wouldn't go anywhere near. So I can see why they were sold, and they've been sold for big money as well. Let's make no bones about it. But do you think this is the model now, the FFP model?
But there's no reason why the business model shouldn't be a productive model for the first team. It just appears that they don't grow on trees. We know this. But it appears that the holding house of Manchester City's academy are developing young players to sell. And equally, the bar is very high, we have to say. You're talking about world-class players getting into 11 shirts on a Saturday at 3 o'clock. It's very, very difficult. But my concern is there isn't enough of them threatening and not enough centre-forwards.
Yeah, fair enough.
Sorry. I cut you short there.
Go on, Andy.
I was just going to say, I know that Man City are going to start building a lot of London centres now to start bringing, you know, they say the London swag to up north. And I know they're looking at a lot of London-based youth academy players. Steve, have you heard about this as well?
I could see it. You know, they're going all over the world. It'd be foolish not to expand again in the UK like you were able to when Manchester United and, you know, Alex Ferguson and David Beckham on the team bus when he was 13 and things like that. City obviously had Sancho in their system briefly from Watford before he went to Borussia Dortmund. I'm sure the net is cast far and wide, and they will continue to recruit superbly well. But like I say, I have no real hope that anybody, though, has got... I'm sure the plan is that they will end up playing for Manchester City, and it's difficult to do so, but I just don't get the feeling. My instinct is telling me that there isn't going to be any or enough that threaten, getting in the team, but could possibly make them, you know, millions and millions of pounds. Stel mentioned Angus Gunn. Iheanacho was £25 million on the day that I think almost that we signed Gabriel Jesus for twice as much. We got half of it back from Iheanacho, so the business model is clearly working, but the development model in terms of getting in the team, for me, is failing.
I think it's absolutely incredible when you look at the clubs that City Group hold. I mean, obviously, they've got Man City, they've got Melbourne FC, Montevideo, New York City FC, Mumbai City, Lommel, Girona. I think Girona got something to do with Pep Guardiola's brother, if I'm not mistaken.
His brother.
Yeah, so Yokohama. So this is a global project, which obviously is to make Mansour money and who else? You've got the... who are the other two stakeholders in the club? Oh, I forgot now. Silver Lake, I think. Silver Lake are one. And there's a Chinese company involved.
Wouldn't you think they'd have a 19-year-old out of all that lot that could possibly sit on the bench and threaten Jesus and Aguero and come on for the last 20 minutes of games and they haven't?
Well, there it is. I know that they've signed a right back for an 18-year-old Brazilian right back from Coritiba, so I think he's going to be sent out to that part of the world, or maybe to Belgium, to get his work permit and passport, or whatever. And then,
Stel, the nearest thing they've got is Lucas Nemecha, who was sub today for Middlesbrough. That's the nearest they've got to anybody that could be a youth player, turn young man, turn young professional, turn City substitute, turn City starter. He's the nearest they've got in a forward position to being that man, and he was sub for Middlesbrough today.
Mm. Well, I'm going to stick my neck out here, Steve, and you know people are probably going to shoot me down, but you know it's just my opinion.
Yeah,
I think. Guardiola will be out the door pretty soon. That's what I think. I think he'll be out the door. Not because he'll be sacked. I think he'll just have had enough of this. I think anyway. Or it would be a mutual thing. I know people are going to say to me, well, if he just walks, then he misses out on whatever payout he's going to get if he gets sacked. But I think with Pochettino available at the moment, it wouldn't surprise me if there's something in the offing for him to take over. I don't know, it's just a hunch I've got. I could be wrong, I probably am wrong, but it's just a hunch.
That'd be wrong for them to do that, but because Guardiola is a better manager and coach than Pochettino, and the players that he's lost this year, and still he's a easy second place.
Yeah, but Rod, listen. There's no smoke without fire, and we've heard for the past 6 or 7 months about Guardiola having talks with Juventus and possibly being a bit unsettled. His wife is still in Spain. I don't know.
Lads, you mind me putting something out there for you then?
Go ahead.
Do you mind? Yeah.
Yeah.
Stel, if you're going to say possibly that Guardiola might move on, that can be your commitment. And obviously, I will watch. And obviously, his mum died through the coronavirus and things like that.
Oh yeah, you're right. Bloody hell, I forgot about that.
I'm not going to go against that because obviously, it's a pot shot. It's just something that you feel in your water might happen, and something that we will look out for, and we'll put in our diaries on this day that you committed to that. If that day happens, Stel, I don't think that Manchester City will look any further than Brendan Rodgers.
Really?
You can just park it up.
Wow.
Just go with me on that one. I think that's the first place they will look.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. You know what? I think Arsenal missed the trick by not grabbing him.
I think
Arsenal, when they had the chance, they should have got him.
Wow.
Stel, if I'd be back on the show another time, if this happens, and keep this one on tape.
Wow. Well,
is that because of the philosophy, Steve, of Brendan Rodgers?
I think he's spoken to the club over years as part of his own development. I think he's well liked. I think he went over to Celtic and proved himself, but then had to get rid of the myth of it's easy over there to win leagues and cups. It's never easy to win any league or cup, but I think his reputation has been enhanced by coming back to the Premier League. And we talked about Sean Dyche before, and we also said about Leicester City. So obviously the manager is overachieving, and I think that'll be the model that Manchester City will be looking at should, as Rodri says, the best head coach in the world eventually move on. If it's in a long, long time, there might be other challenges to Brendan Rodgers, but if it's as short as Stel is predicting, just as a feel in his water, then I'm going to go that they would look for the Leicester City manager to replace.
Well, wow. Don't go with what's in my water, because Rod will tell you I love cold coffee. So and Rod is heaving now. But no, as I say, it's just a hunch. But yeah. Right, gentlemen, we've been doing
even though the players that Steve's mentioning they won't have next year, they'll still be very, very, very strong. Because even though Silva's gone, Foden is a very, very good player. I think he'll play a lot more next year. Yes, Sané will be a big miss, but
yeah.
I'm sure they'll replace him. So, yeah, they'll bring in two or three players, no doubt, because the Manchester City, they've got some money to spend, and they'll probably recoup some money to the players that are going out. But they'll still be very, very strong.
They need a centre half and a left back like in stone now, straight away.
Well, you got Koulibaly. There's rumours of Koulibaly, isn't there, Steve?
Yeah. Heard that tonight
but,
myself, yeah.
Here's one for you, Stez. If Guardiola does go and Brendan Rodgers goes, what's the chance of him taking the left back with him?
Chilwell.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless he goes to Chelsea first. But we could speculate and do fantasy teams and fantasy managers. but for the here and now, Rod, we saw the other night that Fernandinho can't do another season at centre half, and Mendy can't even do two games out of three at left back, and Zinchenko is a really pleasant substitute. So there's 50% of the back four that need changing.
So who would you prefer, my namesake or Fernandinho in there?
No, I want Fernandinho because you're weakening two positions with him playing there. So obviously getting back into centre midfield because we've missed him. They were talking about him being the best defensive midfield player, better than Makalele that the Premier League's ever had, and then he's had to do 12 months at centre half.
So you'd rather him in there than Rodri then?
I'd rather him in there than Rodri. Sorry about the namesake for you, mate. But yes. Rodri, I'm liking, but you don't like playing against Fernandinho. He breaks it up. He sets you off on the attack. He does those tactical fouls. He can't. Have you not noticed, obviously, now City have been absolutely nailed this year on the counter-attack so many times, where actually you're hitting Fernandinho at the last moment. But when he was in the middle of the pitch, City never got counter-attacked on because you couldn't get past him first. So,
well, Rodri's a good player. Sorry, go on.
I want him back in the middle of the pitch. And now I know we're not talking world-class, and I admit, you know me, Rod, you know that I'm biased anyway from anybody that lives near us. But I'd have James Tarkowski from Burnley. He didn't cover himself with glory against us last week. But a young English centre-half, very much in the Harry Maguire mould. He's at the same stage, I believe, when Maguire went to United, and he's got a cap for England, and he'll get more. Basically, James Tarkowski is better than Otamendi and Stones. So if them two went and he came, I would see that as an improvement. And if you got Chilwell instead of Mendy, I'd see that as an improvement as well. Two British lads making up 50% of the back four. I know there's going to be better world-class players, lads. You mentioned Koulibaly, and that would be brilliant. I'm more than happy with Laporte. But if we acquired Chilwell and Tarkowski in the summer, I'd be pleased.
Do you think it's important that you get Premier League based players or experienced Premier League?
Yes, I do.
Than bringing in the kid from Napoli?
I'm greedy. I'd like him, but I've already just released Stones and Otamendi, so there's room for one more. So there's your three players: Koulibaly and Chilwell and Tarkowski. And I don't see places for Mendy. I don't see places for Otamendi, and I certainly don't see a place for Stones.
Well, look, sorry for sounding facetious right now, but you mentioned Brendan Rodgers possibly taking the job, and given his how shall we say, track record of signing players, the likes of Dejan Lovren and Alberto Mourinho, you wanted the centre back and a left back, they'll be rubbing their hands with glee.
Yeah, well, as we've discussed in the programme, I'm not sure the City manager signs all the players. They've got enough people behind the scenes to do that. So I think the City manager's just come in and coach them now and try and make them better.
Well, I don't think they'll let him spend £30 million on Benteke. So
no,
there you go.
No, true.
Andy's laughing now.
Do you know what it is, Phil? I was actually going to say to
Steve,
that Mendy actually reminds me of Moreno. he's brainless, man. He's reckless, brainless, makes the craziest decisions. And it literally was Moreno at Liverpool, wasn't it?
Stel?
Yeah.
Do you remember David Bellion?
Oh, God, yeah.
The greats always sign a joker or a dud. They're always perfect. Do you remember that?
Of course. Come on, Cleberson, Jemba.
Jemba.
Yeah. Oh, we can go. William Prunier.
Here's one for you. William Prunier.
Yeah. Played two games.
He only got a game to his Eric's mate. Yeah.
Got bullied at White Hart Lane. That was the last time we saw him. Taibbi.
Yeah.
Christ. We could just go on all day about it. Dud
United
signing.
The managers sometimes they could be good on paper. They get there and they're absolute dud.
There you go. It is what it is. Right, gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you ever so much for your time. Another fantastic episode, and hopefully we could do this again very soon.
Right, thanks for having me.
Great stuff. Cheers, Steve. Andy, Twitter handle?
Andy_MP7.
Excellent, wonderful. Well, thank you again for your time, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure, and yeah, you know, it was difficult for me to congratulate you, but you know what, I'm going to be honest with you. Like we've known each other for a long time. We've been doing these shows for ages, and I think as you get older, you kind of not lose love for football, but you just become more mature about things, and you know, it's just one of those things. So when you won the league, I'm not going to lie, I've messaged quite a few Liverpool fans and say, listen, congrats, like you've waited a long time for it. Yeah. It hurts me to say this, but
you've messaged me before we actually did it as well, which is nice.
because Willian scored that penalty, I'm like, fuck this, what's going to happen? Surely ain't going to come back. So no, but look, congratulations, and let's see what happens next season anyway. But
No, it was great. It was good being on the show for a whole season. To obviously, there's still 7 games to go, which is mental.
Christ.
it's been a really, really, you know, pleasing season still. You know, you've obviously witnessed a lot of them being Man United fans, and you know, it's nice to be that part of football at the moment for us is brilliant.
Absolutely. Rod.
Rod James Giggs.
Wonderful. And have you got any plans for the rest of the week?
No, but I've just sent you some on WhatsApp. No, sorry, I said that out loud then, didn't I? So,
Jesus Christ. Brilliant. I'm not going to open it.
Yeah. No, okay.
brilliant. Right, so that's it for us. The season's not over yet. I'm not.
was the WhatsApp that you just sent him, Rod, something along the lines of "Don't get this Liverpool fucker on again"?
No, because whenever Rod sends me something and I open it up, it's got those really loud sex noises. So I'm not
I did the same. I'm humble in victory or defeat, Andy, and you know, I'm gracious. They obviously deserved it. Best team always wins the league every year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'll tell you what as well, one thing I've never witnessed, only once, is a Man United Liverpool title race was 2009 with the facts season. When Rafa and his facts, that was the only real title race there's ever been, really, between Liverpool and Man United in recent times, isn't it?
That's right.
So it'd definitely be more interested if it was a Liverpool Man United title race than a Man City one, to be fair.
Interesting, yeah, but stressful, definitely.
Brilliant.
There you go. Right, guys, that's it for another episode. We'll be back hopefully in a few days. So until next time, take care.